Okay, at this time, it's my pleasure to welcome to Gerwick.net an icon in wrestling, one of the greatest wrestling managers of all time. You may know him from his world-class days as Percy Pringle III, and, of course, most recently in the World Wrestling Entertainment as Paul Bearer, the manager of The Undertaker. It's a pleasure to welcome to this line, and I'm not sure if I should call him Percy Pringle or Paul Bearer, but I'm going to probably call him both. Percy Pringle III, how you doing today?
Great, man, and I appreciate the invitation. This is the first time that I've talked to you, and I appreciate the invite and looking forward to some interview this morning.
Absolutely, and we do appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us. I know you don't do a lot of these interviews, and there's certainly more and more audio shows popping up all the time. So we do
absolutely
appreciate your time and talking to us today.
That's cool. It all seems like everybody and their brother has a radio talk show now, and
right.
And I get invites all the time, and I just pick a few, and I'm glad I picked you. So let's go. I'm ready to roll.
All right, we are too, and we're probably gonna be bouncing around during this interview, but I wanted to kind of touch about some current events. And recently, actually just over the weekend, we lost a great wrestling manager, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. I know you mentioned it on your Twitter page. I was wondering if you could give us some quick thoughts and memories of Sir Oliver.
Man, what a first-class individual, gentleman, professional. I could just sit here and I wish I had all the vocabulary and all the adjectives I would like to describe my friend Hump. He was really, really sick the last few months of his life. And my last little run here with WWE, we'd done a paper, I think we'd done Buried Alive in Minneapolis, which where Hump lived just a few months ago. And he came down to the show, and I had the opportunity to spend some quality time with him, and he was just really starting to get sick then. And I also had the pleasure of meeting myself and another old-time manager, Percival Friend, Al Friend. Me and Al Friend inducted Hump into the Cauliflower Alley. Gave him an award at the Cauliflower Alley probably, I'm just guessing, probably about 7 years ago, maybe, might be 8 years ago. But Hump was a dear, dear friend, and what a professional he was, and a performer, and gosh, I really hate that we've lost him, but he was so sick and really suffered so much. And so I know he's not hurting anymore, and he's resting high on that mountain where he should be. He's really going to be missed.
Yeah, I think a lot of the wrestling fans of today probably don't realize his great runs in the 70s in California and Florida. He had some great runs. And a lot of us only remember him from WWF. He managed Bam Bam Bigelow, or had a run in WCW. But, boy, he's a legendary figure.
His run in Florida, especially with Kevin Sullivan, you know, back in the famous, quote, devil times, unquote, of Kevin Sullivan, you know, he was very, very, you know, well known then. Again, I guess that was probably more the territorial days then, right before the big bam of WWE and everything. And of course, he was the manager of the Hollywood Blondes, the first Hollywood Blondes, Jerry
right.
Brown and Buddy Roberts, which Buddy Roberts, of course, is one of the Freebirds and a very, very dear friend of mine. Yeah, Hump, he'd been around the block several times.
Yep. Again, a sad, sad loss, and it's too bad that, you know, like I said, more people don't realize what a great run that he did have in the wrestling business.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about kind of what's going on in your life currently. I know you just did a stint for Millennium Wrestling up in Boston, and you've also just recently did NWA Hollywood. How did those go, and kind of what's going on currently in your professional life?
Good, really good. Some folks may or may not know, I lost my wife 2 years ago to breast cancer, and we've been married 30 years. And to be married 30 years in this business is certainly an accomplishment that I'm very, very proud of, because there's not a lot of us that can boast, you know, that fact, because it takes this very, very special lady to put up, you know, with what,
sure.
What we do for a living, and you can understand that.
Absolutely.
So the last two years have really been kind of rough, but we're doing okay. I have my moments still, but we're doing fine. I got two wonderful sons, and they're both married, and each one has a a daughter, and I have another granddaughter on the way, so I'm going to have three beautiful granddaughters here and to take care of the old man. But about a year ago, I was working, I'm trying to put this in, to give you the Reader's Digest version, and I'm not trying to bore anybody, but a lot of folks also might not know that I'm a real mortician. I have a degree in mortuary science. I'm a licensed funeral director and embalmer, and I've always been involved in wrestling and the funeral service since I was a teenager. And for the last about 5 years, I've been managing a funeral home down here on the Gulf Coast where I live. And shortly after my wife died, I really started having problems, you know, going into the office every day. I was going through the grief process myself, you know, and I had a couple offers to do some of the legend events, you know, like the NWA Legends Convention that Greg Price has and a lot of the other stuff that goes on across the country. And I was getting calls all the time, but I would always turn them down. So just out of the blue one day, I said, heck, let me try it. So I started doing a couple of personal appearances and a couple of indie shows just to see if I still had the passion, which I knew I did, because I never stopped watching, keeping my finger on the pulse of the business. And I started doing a few little things. And so I decided to just back away from the funeral business for a while, which it was a year last month. It was in February of last year that I decided to put my funeral career back on hold and start doing a little bit more wrestling and doing some independent shows and legends conventions and things like that. And then that little 6 month run that I just finished up with WWE popped up. And what's really interesting about that is that when they first called me, they called me in June of last year and had me on conference call with the creative team. And hey, Percy, you know, we got an idea, but before we go any further with it, we'd like to ask you, do you have any interest at all in coming back up here, you know, to the WWE? And immediately, I didn't take a breath. I said, no. You know, I went, nope. And I was on a conference call, and you could just feel the surprise in there. It was like, no, because, you know, there are a lot of people that turn them down. And I wasn't turning them down because I really, you know, I had put that part of my life on the shelf as far as the WWE goes. I've been under a Legends contract ever since I had left, you know, when they buried me in concrete, back whenever the hell that was. You know, that's the WWE's first American bash in Norfolk, Virginia. Gosh, that was about 6 years ago, I guess. I don't remember, 7 years ago. So I really put the WWE up on the shelf, although I watched the pot up and kept in touch with all my friends and everything. I had no plans at all returning to that schedule. Man, I'm 56 years old, and my old knees hurt, and I had lost my wife, and I had been accustomed to being at home every night. And you understand what I'm saying? I really didn't want to go back to a full-time travel schedule at all, and I told them out front. So they kept calling me back and made it pretty clear that they really needed me pretty bad. And Tekker had called me, and I guess you all probably remember the storyline. You know, he had lost all of his power and everything, and they needed to bring him back to where he was. And they had the idea that bringing Paul Bearer back and the character and the urn and all that, maybe we could accomplish that, which we did. But I had told them no, and it took them about a month. You know, dangling carrots in front of me and things, and to get me back up there. And I only signed. I said, well, let's just try it. I'll sign a short contract. You know, so I signed a 6 month contract, and always done TV and pay per views. I did not go on the road. Didn't do house shows. I just didn't feel. If I had to do it, I probably could have done it, but I just didn't want to go back to a full time schedule anymore. You know, I just don't have it. I didn't want to do it. That's the bottom line. So I was signed for 6 months, and we accomplished what we wanted to do. Taker had a major problem with his shoulder that he needed to have surgery on, you know. So after we'd got his power back and everything, and we'd done the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view where I turned on him and went back with Kane, which the fans just could not believe that we'd done that so quick. Which worked really well because we got, you know, it was a few times that we really got the fans because they totally didn't expect anything like that. So it was good. And it's good these days when you can catch the fans off guard. You know what I'm talking about. The
right.
Fans of today, they're on top of it, you know, with the internet and this and that and the other. They pretty much know what's going on, and they like to read the spoilers and see what's going to be happening and all that. And there's a couple times during this run we were able to really catch them off guard. But that was the plan from the beginning. I was only planning on coming back for a short time, and everything worked fine. We'd done the Buried Alive match, and that was to enable Taker to go have his surgery that he needed on his shoulder to prepare for this big WrestleMania 27, you know, coming up next week. So I go off on tangents, and I know I have, so I apologize. But basically, that's what's been going on with me. I've been working with, I was working with NWA Hollywood before I went back to Vince. So as soon as I finished up there, I like those guys out there. They're treating me real well. I have fun out there. And if it's not fun, I just don't like to do it anymore. So
no,
if I get a call or something, I just don't feel like I want to have fun. I turn it down. I don't care how good the money is. If I'm not going to have fun, I don't want to do it. I want to have fun, you know.
Right.
And the way I feel, and it's true, I don't care what anybody says. If the talent, like myself, if I'm having fun, I can guarantee the fans are going to have fun. Because I'm at my best, and I'm performing at my best, and I know the fans are enjoying what I'm doing out there.
No, it's great to go on this tangent here, as you said, because you've answered about three or four of my questions. Obviously, I wanted to ask you about your,
I'm a talker. You might not ever get me off here. let you get back to your questions again, because I'm real bad about going off on tangents.
Hey, you're perfectly fine, and as I said, you probably answered about three or four of my questions here on my sheet that I wrote down for you when I knew I was going to have you on the line. So we do appreciate that. And yeah, obviously, I was going to ask you about your return to WWE last year, and obviously, you had to side in storyline with Kane because he's your son, right?
Yeah, storyline-wise, yes, he's my son. But, you know, my loyalty has always been with The Undertaker. It just boggles my mind that it has been 20. I signed my first contract with Vince on December 22nd, 1990.
Wow.
And my God, it's 2011. And so I've had, whether I was on TV or not, I always had some kind of connection with the company, even when I was off. When I wasn't under a regular talent contract, I was still in contact And for a long time, I was working backstage in developmental, and I worked as an agent. I worked as one of the producers of what we call the gorilla position. I'm sure all the fans, you know, that are listening probably know what that is.
Sure.
That's the kind of the stage director up at the top of the ramp as you go through the curtain there, where it's a kind of the middleman between the truck and Vince and what's going on in the ring. And I was working in developmental, and that was back when we had like five different developmental territories instead of just one like they have now. We had OVW, of course, in Louisville. We had in Memphis, and we had Les Thatcher in Cincinnati. We had Rick Bassman in L.A. And I was just traveling around. Every week I would just go to each one of the developmental territories, and which I would really enjoyed it, and scouting talent and stuff. And most of the guys I say most, there's a handful of them that are at the top of the game right now. John Cena and Brock Lesnar was one of them, and Shelton Benjamin, and my mind's kind of slow right now, but I could
Kurt Angle?
Yeah, they were all
starting
at that time, and
right.
That's when I was doing developmental, so I had the pleasure of working with those guys, you know, during their early years as they were climbing the ladder to get to the top. And that includes Randy Orton, too, and some other names. But that, you know, so I was always doing something. If I wasn't on TV, it didn't mean I was gone. I was working backstage or working in developmental or this and that and the other. So, I've had a 20-year connection, just like Taker. Our first WrestleMania was WrestleMania 7 in 1991 in Los Angeles, where Taker wrestled Superfly Jimmy Snuka. And, hell, what, WrestleMania 27 now?
All right.
20 years. Of course, I wasn't on every WrestleMania, but I was on a bunch of them.
Well, obviously, you've managed Undertaker as long as you have, and probably I was watching Raw last night, and Triple H was talking how, you know, important this streak is, this WrestleMania streak. It's more important than a lot of the titles that he even won. And I mean, what's your perspective? I mean, this is
absolutely.
It's incredible. What an incredible run. 18-0 for WrestleManias.
There's nobody else that's ever even got close to that. You know, even the almighty Hulk Hogan couldn't touch it. And nobody ever will. I can't see that ever happening again. And Undertaker is such a character. His character, his persona, he didn't need a belt anyway. I mean, a belt were pretty much, you know, he didn't need a belt.
Right.
The fans loved him. The fans loved us from the get-go. We'd done everything we could to stay heel when we first started out there, and the fans turned us babyface. They just loved our gimmick. And, hell, we loved it too. And we still love it. Oh, yes!
Well, fans aside, I mean, it's like, you know, they want Stone Cold Steve Austin to be a heel, but the fans turn him babyface. You know, it happens sometimes. So
right, it does. Heck,
I want to ask you. You were talking about developmental back in the day when they had the five different developmental territories. You're talking about OVW and Rick Bassman and Memphis and Puerto Rico. And today they only have one affiliation with Tampa,
right.
Steve Kern's Florida Championship Wrestling. Why do you think they eliminated the other developmental territories, and why do you think they only have one developmental territory today?
And like I told you from the get-go before we started recording, my opinions are my opinions, and it's
sure.
what I believe, and I'm one to tell the truth of it, what I believe, whether it's right or whether it's wrong. And my thoughts on that, truthfully, I don't know. I really don't know why there's only one. I don't know. Because there is room for more. And we certainly could use more. And I don't know why. You know, I really don't. So I can't give you that answer. We need more. We need something, you know, out on the West Coast and middle of the country. And instead of just shooting everybody down to Florida. I guess it's very, very convenient, you know, for the company and probably less costly to have that one place. But, God, there's so many guys. You know, I've been working in the indies and stuff. There's so much good talent out there, and there's just so limited space for them.
Sure.
You know, one guy dropped, and they need one guy. They got, excuse my language, but they got 2,000 people waiting in line wanting to jump in there, you know? It's just not like it used to be in the old days, in the territory days when I started. You got to remember that I had my first match. Well, yeah, match. I started out as a wrestler in 1974, and it's just not like it used to be. And things have changed. But if you can't change with the times, you know, forget it. There's a lot of the guys that you talk to, and I'm sure you talked to them, that are really, really bitter. That all they do is run the product down today, and you just got to remember, this is 2011, you know. It's the age of the internet. It's the age of the cell phone and GPS and things like that that we never had.
Right.
My Lord, but we couldn't even find a payphone on the side of the road back in the day, you know. So now, and my last run here with Vince was really my first experience of having a GPS on the road. We never had a GPS. But this was my first time that I was back on the road that I had a GPS, and I wondered, how in the world did we find all those towns back in the day? But we always did. We always did. But I got off on another tangent. You asked about developmental. I think we certainly do need more than that. They
yeah.
do. I don't think one's enough.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And I think most people I talk to, it's kind of mind-boggling why they'd only have one, especially when they were so successful. With Danny Davis down in Louisville, he seemed like some of the greats that we currently have. I mean, Batista came through OVW, and why don't they have some relationship with him or another great trainer? I mean, like Lance Storm runs a school up in Calgary,
Batista was another one that was in developmental during the time that I was doing the scouting there. And of course, it was Les Thatcher in Cincinnati, and he was really close to OVW. I mean, and geographically. And they work very well together, and Les Thatcher is a tremendous mind in our industry and a trainer as well. And then, of course, Rick Bassman, a lot of people have different thoughts about him, but, you know, there's a lot of guys came from there.
Sure.
The Warriors came from there. Sting came from there.
John Cena,
John Heidenreich.
Tara from TNA.
Yeah. But they all came from there. So,
yeah.
Obviously, there is a place for more than one developmental, you know. But like I said, that's just my opinion, and
sure.
We all have them, just like everything else. See, I'm being nice. I was going to say a bad word, but I'm going to be nice.
That's okay. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great trainers out there. You got Dory Funk Jr. down in
yes.
In Florida, you got Harley Race as a school up in Missouri. So
yeah.
There's a lot of great trainers out there. You know, if they could ever hook up with one of these territories, it'd be great. You know,
as you said, they're so limited. The way the company is set up. When I say the company, we're talking about WWE right now. I'm not talking about TNA, which I have a great respect for TNA as well. I watch their product. I have some dear friends that work for the company. When they're in the area, I go to their shows. I stay in contact, you know, with them. And I worked for them for a little while there, their first year, when they first started out. So I have a respect for them, too.
Well, you took me right to my next question. I was going to ask you about TNA. You work for TNA. There's a lot of people that, I guess fans, media, when they look at TNA, they look at the talent level, and they have a lot of great talent on the roster, and yet it seems like the perception is they've kind of been stuck in the mud for years. They've kind of had the same rating, same business model, et cetera.
Yeah.
What do they need to do kind of push them out of that rut?
I really don't know. Just as I watch the WWE product and I watch the TNA product, sometimes I see things and I go, what are they doing? You know, Pope, their last show, for example, this past Thursday night, and I don't like to, run anybody in the ground, but when they done that, the healing thing, that they done in the middle of the ring, and then when he took that knife and put it to that guy's throat, I sat up in my chair, I'm going, what in the hell is going on? You know, and I don't understand. I don't understand why they need to do things like that, because it's not necessary. And I don't know. I don't know. I'm not a writer. I guess I could be, but I'm not a writer. I don't want to be, because it's definitely a tough job. And the best friends, next to the Undertaker, one of the longest friends I've had in the business, and we grew up together watching wrestling down here. He's from down here in the South, right? I'm from Mobile, Alabama. He's from Pensacola, Florida, and he's currently vice president of the creative department. Is Michael Hayes, the Freebird.
Right.
We're just like brothers. We're real brothers, and I tell him all the time, I don't know, especially with his history. Back in the Freebirds have a, And I haven't spoken out. It just coming to mind, I've got to do this because I haven't said a word about this publicly to anybody until right now, because they're now pretty much have announced all the Hall of Fame for this WrestleMania next week. I think they're pretty much announced them all, and it just burns my butt, and I think it's such a travesty and a slap in the face to one of the greatest tag teams in the history of our industry that revolutionized tag team wrestling, is the Freebirds.
Absolutely.
And why the Freebirds were not inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in Atlanta, GA, which was always the hometown of the Freebirds, Bad Street, USA.
Absolutely. Yep.
It just burns my butt, because I think it's an insult to the Freebirds. I really do. I'm scheduled to be at Fan Access this coming week, and if I'm not, it might be because of that comment. But it's because I've never publicly said anything about it, either written or verbal. I don't understand. I really don't.
Well, we appreciate your honesty, but I mean obviously there's obvious names that are not in the WWE Hall of Fame that, for either political reasons or Yeah. You know, Randy Savage is not in the Hall of Fame.
No, but he should be, and I think that his time will come.
Bruno Sammartino?
And I think that their time will come in time. I get asked all the time about, you know, Percy Archer said that they're not ducking in the Hall of Fame. I said, well, I'm not dead yet. They're, you know, we got plenty of time, and I feel that one day it will come. And when it does come, I think that the greatest honor that they could do me is, because there's absolutely no doubt Undertaker is going in. We certainly know he's not going in this year, but his time is going to come, and the biggest honor I could ever have would be inducted, you know, the year that he does. But all that aside, I just had to say that publicly because I haven't said anything about it. I just think that whatever your opinion is of the Freebirds, I'm prejudiced because they're dear friends of mine. I miss Terry Gordy so dearly. We all started together, me and Terry and Michael and Kamala, and we all started together in the same territory back in the 1970s. And I think it's just a travesty that they did not put the Freebirds in the Hall of Fame in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, a couple of things on that. First is, I think when it's time for Undertaker to go in the Hall of Fame, it should be with you, and I think you should induct the Undertaker, and the Undertaker should induct you.
Yeah, that would be the ultimate honor.
Yeah.
It really would, because we've been business associates and we're dear friends and we stay in touch and we always have. And a lot of fans, well, I keep saying a lot of fans sometimes. Maybe I shouldn't do that because the fans that are listening to this may or may not know that me and Undertaker had a history prior to me going to the WWF,
right,
to become his manager. I managed The Undertaker in his first professional match at the Sportatorium in Dallas in about 1987 against Bruiser Brody. And because that's where he was, and he was just a young kid, and he kept wanting to get in the business, and Buzz Sawyer had, quote, trained him, unquote. He basically just took his money. But Taker was a natural. And he kept coming every week, and Bruiser Brody said, okay, we'll use you tonight. We'll put a mask on you. We'll call you Texas Red, and you'll work with me. And Percy, you go to the ring with him. And you can ask Taker that question today. Why in the world did they send Percy to the ring with you? And he'll tell you to show me the way back, because Bruiser Brody beat the holy hell out of him all over the Dallas Sportatorium. And it's on YouTube. Google Texas Red versus Bruiser Brody, or Bruiser Brody versus Texas Red, and you can see the actual footage of Undertaker's first match with me as his manager against Bruiser Brody at the Sportatorium in Dallas. So we have a history that preceded, us getting together in the WWE, or then WWF.
Who did officially train The Undertaker?
Well, I guess officially it was Buzz Sawyer. But it was a matter, after he got his, quote, training, he came to the School of Hard Knocks. You know, they started using him in Dallas, and then that's shortly thereafter is when the World Class, you know, was falling apart, and Jarrett came in with the USWA, and me and Eric Embry tore the banner off the Sportatorium wall and turned it into the USWA, and Jarrett put a mask on him, called him the Punisher, and he pretty much went, you know, and Steve Austin was breaking in at this time, too.
Right.
General Chris Adams, God rest his soul. Yeah, he had a wrestling school there at the Sportatorium, and I had an office at the Sportatorium. I worked backstage. I was in charge of the merchandising, you know, the T-shirts and pictures and blah, blah, blah. But I was helping Chris Adams with his wrestling school as far as teaching the students the art of interviewing and things like that, things that, you know, I never was a wrestling teacher, but I certainly could help them out with facial expressions and verbalization, you know, promos and stuff like that. And Steve Austin was one of our students, and I ended up being his manager, and I tag teamed with him a few times in some matches, all that stuff on YouTube, too.
Definitely check that out.
So far as actually who officially trained Undertaker, he really, after he started wrestling and Buzz Sawyer got him in and Brody started using him, he just kind of came up and he was a natural. He was certainly a natural.
I always thought Don Jardine trained him. But
everybody thinks that.
Okay.
and Don Jardine had nothing to do with it. Okay. I mean, just dispel that.
Absolutely. That's been out there for a long time.
I get that all the time.
Yeah.
Don Jardine had nothing to do with Undertaker's training. The only reason that folks started saying that is because Taker walked the ropes like Jardine. But Don Jardine had absolutely, and I love Don. He was a dear friend. I miss him. God rest his soul, too. I even managed Don for a little while back when I first broke into the business. And so it was totally no disrespect to Don, but he had nothing to do with the Undertaker's training except Taker started walking the rope flocking, and everybody started saying, putting two and two together and saying Jardine had something to do with it. But he didn't. He did not.
Okay, yeah, you definitely dispel that story, because that one's been going on for a long time about Don Jardine.
I've always heard it, and I always speak up about it, and I'm not hurting anybody's feelings because it's the truth.
Okay, great. Let me talk about tag team. We'll go back to the Freebirds. You're talking about the Freebirds, great tag teams, and you may have noticed on Gerwig.net currently as we record this, it's March 22nd, 2011. We're in the midst of the greatest tag team tournament, and you obviously mentioned the Freebirds. And can you give me some other tag teams that come to mind when you hear your phrase, greatest tag teams, and your personal experiences with them, and memories?
Without a doubt, certainly at the top of the game, the Road Warriors. I've had, of course, I managed Taker and Kane as tag teams many times for years. But probably the best tag team that I ever managed, which might surprise a lot of people when I say this, was Buzz Sawyer and Matt Bourne. What a tremendous tag team they were. But their only problem was that they couldn't keep it in the ring. We'd be on the road on a trip, and then we'd be in the Percy pullover. And they'd get out on the side of the interstate and go to fighting. They were both of them technicians. And I don't need to tell you the history behind Buzz Sawyer and Matt Bourne. They just clicked. They were good. They were so much alike. And I enjoyed managing them tremendously, but I just didn't enjoy them fighting all the time out of the ring. They didn't get paid for that. My God, we're in the business. We're professionals. We're out there to get paid. But there's been so many. I'm kind of drawing a blank right now, but I shouldn't, because there's been so many tag teams. But the Freebirds and the Road Warriors and those guys, they just shine. Of course, Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels.
The Rockers.
They stand out in my mind. And I know there's so many more.
Sure.
More. There's a big list, but gosh.
Let me ask you about the Road Warriors, because I actually had Road Warrior Animal on with me last week, and we were talking about Precious Paul Ellering, obviously their manager, and he is or was their shoot manager. And I was asking Animal, has there ever been another shoot manager? Can you ever remember another one?
Well, I can say that I definitely was really close to being Undertaker's shoot manager.
Okay.
In fact, I'm not talking out of school here, and I won't say nothing that I would want to take back, because I've said it before, and Undertaker's aware of it. When I first started with Taker in the WWF, I was more or less his quote, babysitter, unquote. And I knew it, and I'd done it well, and that's why I kept my job, because I made sure that he made the shows, that he made his flights, I took care of all the, I made our rental car reservations. I made our hotel reservations. I got him where he needed to be. But I didn't handle any kind of financial, ends, which, Paul Ellering certainly did for the Road Warriors. Other than that, I considered myself an Undertaker shoot manager for years.
Okay.
Without a doubt, as far as handling arrangements and of course, I didn't set up his matches and all that, but my God, back in those days, we knew at SummerSlam what we were going to be doing at WrestleMania.
Right.
Yep. And I can promise you right now that up to a couple of weeks ago, guys still didn't know what they were going to be doing at WrestleMania.
They may not still today. I'm not sure.
and the run, exactly. And the runs that me and Taker had with some of the top talent, you know, of course, our run with the Ultimate Warrior, Yokozuna, Kamala, and they just went, I can just sit here and just name, you know, we went around the world with these guys and made some big money with these guys. But we always knew way ahead of time, you know, where we were going with what we were doing. It wasn't like making up as we were going along. We knew as we were going through the tunnel what the light at the end of the tunnel was going to be and how we were going to do the blow off at WrestleMania or whatever. And we always knew way ahead of time, but things have changed. We're talking 20 years ago now.
Right.
So things have definitely changed. And my last run there, this last 6 months run that I had, we were always, I say we because I did too, because I was almost educated to say this, is that they call the company Sports Entertainment. But, and I'll say without a doubt and stand on it, you know, on my word that I saw in the last 6 months that I just finished up there, it's Hollywood. 100% Hollywood. And that's the way, that's the business now.
Yeah.
At least on the WWE end. And that's no disrespect to the company. Because that's the way they operate now. And I'm seeing things on the internet now where they don't even want to be called a wrestling company anymore.
Right.
So I'm not talking bad about anybody. So you understand what I'm saying.
I want to ask you, while I have you on the line here, the art of a good wrestling manager seems to be a lost art today. We hardly ever see any managers anymore. What happened to the wrestling manager? Do you ever see wrestling managers coming back, having an influence in wrestling? Or have those days just kind of passed us by?
I think they're gone. And this is, of course, here, I'll say it again, another disclaimer. This is my personal opinion. The demise of the wrestling manager came when the divas came in, when the women came in. I can't even think of the word I want to say, that the particular age group, you know, say from 16 to whatever, you know, they would much rather see, you know, a pretty good-looking girl. And, of course, the first diva is Sonny.
Yep.
You know, somebody like Sonny or who followed, and the girl that followed her, they would much rather see them than see my fat ugly butt out there, or God rest his soul, Hunter Dink, or Mr. Fuji, or Bobby Heenan, which I love Bobby to death. He's my hero. I pattern almost all my Percy Pringle after Bobby Heenan, and he's one of the heroes that I had, you know, because I've always been a wrestling fan since I was a kid, and that I can truly call a friend now, and I have called him a friend for many years. So the art of the old school manager is pretty much fell by the wayside. So this last little run I had that opportunity to bring that back, you know, to the company and to the business was certainly an honor. And people ask why aren't there any anymore? And I think because there's no one, you know, the way I'm saying, if I can put this in a word and make you understand what I'm trying to say, the young guys today that want to get into the business, they don't have an old school manager to watch, to pattern themselves after, to learn after, you know, guys like Jim Cornette, guys like Jimmy Hart, and those, they're dear friends of mine. There's not many of us anymore. Jimmy Hart's and Jim Cornette's and Percy Pringle, and it's just not there anymore. And it's really sad because that was my niche. I found out early on, like I said, I started out wrestling. I wrestled for a couple of years. And the great Mephisto, Frankie Kane, he was the booker of the first real territory that I worked in, and along with Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy and Kamala, we all started with Frankie Kane. He gave us all our names and gave us our start. He named me Percy Pringle. And the first time he saw me wrestle, I came back to the dressing room. He said, Percy, you ever thought about being a manager? And you can take that two different ways, you know. Like I was really the drizzling shit that I should try something else. So I said, no. He said, well, let's try it. So he hooked me. There was two brothers. They were two Samoan brothers, not from the Alpha and Sika family, Tapu and Tio Taylor, two Samoan brothers. They went they had different names. I managed them as the Mongolians. They were my first tag team. But they've been around the business for years. They're not anymore. But that's when I started. That was my first tag team that I ever managed. And it was almost natural. When Frankie Kane and Mephisto sent me to the ring for the first time, trying to be a manager, I didn't even have to try. I walked back and that was it. It was done. And Frankie said, we're going to call you Percy Pringle, you know, and here we are. That was 1977 maybe or something like that. And here we are, 2011, and you're still calling me Percy.
Absolutely. That's how I first came in contact with you and learned who you were. Of course, I watched, you know, World Class Championship Wrestling on ESPN back in the day and watch all those, you know, managing Rick Rude and, you're always going to be Percy Pringle the Third to me, you know. I know most people will probably, today's wrestling fans will know you as Paul Bearer, and I even asked you, you know, I said, are you Paul Bearer? Are you Percy Pringle? And he said, you can call me whatever you want. And I said, well, to me, you know, you're Percy Pringle. That's who you are, you know. And no disrespect to the Paul Bearer character, but you're Percy Pringle. So
right, and people just call me as what they know me as, and most, especially most of the boys or anybody involved in the business, they call me Percy.
Right.
Gosh, for years, my wife even called me Percy because that's what I was. I mean, for so many years, you know, and I've been very, very blessed. I really have to be just a kid from Mobile, Alabama, you know, that grew up in the old Gulf Coast wrestling territory days of the late 1960s and early 70s that I had a firm foundation and some great teachers and I was just blessed to live the dream. And my God, I'm 56 years old and I'm still doing it. God, thank you, Lord. What a blessing.
You make it sound like 56 is old. 56 is young anymore.
Oh, man. When I'm on those airplanes flying across country and walking through those airports in Atlanta and pulling them bags and trying to climb them stairs to get in the ring with these young kids, you know, I'm going, Yeah, my 56 might be young, but my knees here don't tell me that.
Let me ask you too before we wrap, because we're running quickly out of time here, and we do appreciate your time.
No problem.
Was there anybody you didn't get a chance to manage, or was there anybody where somebody said, "Hey, Percy, maybe you should manage this guy," or maybe we'll somewhere down the line we'll give you so and so to manage? Was there anybody that you really wanted to manage that you didn't get the opportunity to manage?
No. And one day I sit here in my home office, which is kind of like my little mini museum, you know. If you only can see my home office, I just the original urn from the Undertaker days, you know, sitting right here on my shelf here in my office, and a lot of the awards that I've been blessed to receive, and covers from magazines that I've had framed and stuff. It's more like a little museum here than anything else. But I look around as I'm talking to you right now, as I'm spinning around in my desk chair and looking at all these pictures, and if they only could talk, I was just very blessed, and I can't think of any other word. I can't think of anybody I would ever, you know, had. And like I said, I made a list one time, and I've been with over 40 guys. Oh man, that don't sound good, does it? I've been with over 40 guys. Excuse me, I didn't mean it that way. I've been in the corner at ringside with over 40 guys, you know, through the years. You know, some of them very well known, and some of them not so very well known. But they've all played an important part in what I've done. I've been able to stand on the shoulders of giants and live the dream. And I am truly, truly blessed. I still am today.
Now, one question we did get from Twitter. I know you managed the Dingle Warrior bound in world champion, world class. What's he doing today, and do you still have a relationship with him?
No. We don't. And for a while there, we stayed in touch a little bit by email and stuff, and I haven't had any contact with him in a couple of years. We had certainly had a great, let's clarify that a little bit. He was the Dingle Warrior in Texas. Of course, he became the Ultimate Warrior.
Sure.
Jim Helwig.
Yeah.
And I've always had a great relationship with him, and even when people's calling him crazy and he's writing all this nuts stuff on the internet and doing crazy things, I never had a problem with him. I never did. I don't have anything bad to say about him. I really don't.
And as we wrap this up, go ahead and plug your website, your blog, if you want to plug your Twitter, and anything you got coming up in the future for the fans to check you out.
Well, you can pretty much find out anything about me on my website. It's very easy, percypringle.com. And right on the splash page, right on the front, there's some links to my Twitter, some links to my blog, and I had a hell of a damn Facebook page going. That I had worked really, really hard on. And all of a sudden, one day, about 3 weeks ago, it just disappeared. And I started to fight with Facebook about it, and I just gave up. I said, to hell with it. Just move on. I lost my personal Facebook page. I had, personal Facebook page. These are people that I know personally, that I have a personal relationship with, whether it be family, personal friends or guys in the business. No disrespect to the fans. I didn't have any fans on there, and I lost 600 plus, close friends. They just disappeared. My personal Facebook and my Facebook fan page, they just took it from me.
Wow.
And can't give me any real reason why they done it, and I just didn't feel like fighting with them. So, I don't know whether I'm gonna start my, I started my personal Facebook page again, but my, the fan page that I had, I don't know if I'm going to do that again or not, because I really don't know. But anyway, if you go to percypringle.com, I have a picture gallery, a lot of old pictures from through the years. I have a story section with stories that I tell. I wish I had more time to write more stories, and I even have my own Hall of Fame, the people that I have that I personally picked that I consider in my heart to be part of my Hall of Fame, Percy's Hall of Fame. So if you go to percypringle.com, there's also an email address that if you want to holler at me, I'm real proud of myself that I answer all my email and read it all. And I appreciate the support the fans have given me all these years. My gosh, I'm getting close to being in the business for almost 40 years now.
Wow.
And if it wasn't for the fans and guys like you, and there certainly would have been a me. So I appreciate it, and I certainly appreciate this kind invitation having me on today.
Well, we do appreciate your time, Percy. Definitely check out his website, and all the best. And, of course, as you said before.
Oh, yes, just one quick thing. I do have a few things coming up.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I'm going to be in Nashville, Tennessee this Saturday night for the NWA main event. They're opening up a new arena there. And they got a big card coming up this Saturday in Nashville. I think they're going to do a ribbon cutting like at 6 o'clock at the new arena there. They have a website. I think it's NWA main event. Just Google that and you can find it. And, I'm going to be, at the Access for WrestleMania 27, the fan Access there. And I'm going back to NWA Hollywood on April the 10th, which is my birthday. Gosh, I'm going to be 57. My knees are really going to hurt after that. But I've been staying fairly busy. I usually go out on the weekends, two or three weekends a month, and we're doing okay. My health is good. Everything's good. I'm we're hanging in there. And once again, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. We do appreciate it, and we wish you all the best.
All right, my friend. Take care.
Thank you.